हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गराधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Page 82. Verses 42 to 48, Sri Krishna resumes his pastime. Sukadeva Goswami continued, after granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves, who were still where they had been a year earlier, and brought them to the riverbank, where he had been taking his meal and where his cowherd boyfriends remained just as before. Right? Because when Brahma came, then he was sitting with all the cows in the exact same position as when Brahma had come the first time and saw them and then made the plan to steal the calves and then the cowherd boys. Right? So he was in that position, but then he was bewildered that it was there. Then he manifested as the Vishnumurtis. Right? So now that pastime is over, now Brahma is gone. So it's just Krishna and Brahma. Now Brahma now going. Now he goes. He takes the calves that are now back, and then goes back to where the cowherd boys are. Mm. Is that something? Mm. Yeah.
That means the scene initially began. He goes to search for cows.
Yes. Yes, so now he's at the point where he's searching. But when Brahma came for the second time, he was in exactly the same position he had been 1 year before, with the cows and the calves, and everybody was there. That's why he became bewildered. Yes, so now he's just with the calves that he went off to look for. Now he's going back. The Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves who were still where they had been a year earlier and brought them to the riverbank, where he had been taking his meal and where his cowherd boyfriends remained just as before. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. Krishna gave permission for Brahma to leave by his silence, for it is said, silence means consent. Brahma had asked permission to go in verse 39. Seeing the Lord's silence, Brahma took that as his permission. Krishna could not break his silence because he had to perfectly play the part of the young son of the king of Braja in the pastime of bewilderment of Brahma. Krishna continued his act of looking for the calves and boys as described in 10.13.16.
Please, can you explain this about
silence? Like, it's quite silence means? Yeah. Means if someone asks you a question and you don't give an answer, but you're paying attention, that generally means you agree. That's the Vedic understanding. Does that make sense? So he's playing the part of the cowherd boy, and that's how he's in Vrindavan. That's how he plays it. He's in Dwarka, then he's the Supreme Lord, and then Brahman, and the whole thing like that. But here he's just a cowherd boy. So what does a cowherd boy do when Lord Brahma shows up? When Brahma began his prayers in this chapter, Krishna, as a young gopa, anxious to find the calves, could not understand where Brahma had come from, what he was doing, and what he was saying. By remaining silent, Krishna completed his act as a cowherd boy. He played the role of being ignorant of his own powers in front of Brahma, who is dependent on him, and thus the word natya, actor, is used. However, in front of Jashoda and other devotees in intimate relationships, the ignorance that he shows for his own powers covered by the Mahaprem of the inhabitants of Braja is not a pretense and is not described as Natya. That ignorance is real. Krishna brought the calves absorbed in eating grass back to the same place on the bank of the river. On the bank of the river was the same as before, with the cowherd boys sitting in the same positions. In that place where the same original cowherd boys, different from the expansion cowherd boys who performed Leela for 1 year with the Lord. Right, so here Krishna is having to play the part of being in ignorance with Brahma. Because Brahma, he reciprocates the mood of the particular devotee. So Brahma seeing him in that mood of reverence in that, because he's a demigod. So he sees him as the Supreme Lord. Then naturally he will reciprocate in that way. But because he's a cowherd boy, then he doesn't externally behave in that way. You know what I'm saying? So he just continues acting as a cowherd boy, because that's the pastime that goes on there. But not that he doesn't understand, but he's playing the part of. So that's why it says Natya, an actor. But when he's with Mother Jashoda and the others, him playing the part that he's just ordinary boy, that's not an act. That he's in that mood. Because that's their devotion. That's how they deal with him. Right? That's going to be the difference.
Yes. Did the other boys watch the scene?
No, they weren't there. They were at their place. He's gone. As far as they're concerned, Krishna went off to get the calves, and now Krishna comes back. Like that. So they don't know that he went off. Brahma had taken them. He expanded for a year. They did all these pastimes. Then Brahma came back. And then Krishna revealed his position, and then Krishna, you know, he gave all his prayers and everything there, and then Brahma having left, now Krishna brings the calves that he went off to look for 1 year before, and now brings them back. So as far as the boys go, they're sitting in the same place, doing the same thing, everything's exactly the same, and Krishna's now coming back with the calves, so that's all they know.
So? So the intimacy that Krishna has with his devotees, is that going to determine whether he will be a bhakti or not a bhakti? Because the intimacy with Yashoda.
The point is he is always performing the pastimes with the devotees. And so he's always known as, you know, like an expert actor who, you know, is dressed in nice ways and does the parts. Because is Krishna a king?
Yes.
Yes. No, but I'm saying, does he need to be a king to run things?
Mm-hmm.
He's himself. So therefore everything is acting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But with the residents of Braja, because of their devotion, then in that mood, he's not acting.
Mm-hmm.
He's just under the control of their love. But with everybody else, because if it's mixed with opulence, then he's always aware. And because he's being aware, then he's playing a part.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, in opulence, he's always playing a part.
Mm-hmm.
But in Braj, in the sweetness, he's not playing the part. He's just reciprocating with their love.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the next four verses show how the power of Yoga Maya allowed the cowherd boys to be unaware of the missing time of 1 year and complete their lunch pastimes with Krishna as previously. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King, although the boys had passed an entire year apart from the Lord of their lives, they had been covered by Lord Krishna's illusory potency and thus considered that year merely half a moment. What indeed is not forgotten by those whose minds are bewildered by the Lord's illusory potency. By that power of Maya, this entire universe remains in perpetual bewilderment. And in this atmosphere of forgetfulness, no one can understand his own identity. The cowherd boys said to Lord Krishna, You are returned so quickly. We have not eaten even one morsel in your absence. Please come here and take your meal without distraction. Then Lord Rishikesha, smiling, finished his lunch in the company of his cowherd friends. While they were returning from the forest to the homes in Vraja, Lord Krishna showed the cowherd boys the skin of the dead serpent Agasura. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, just as Mahamaya keeps the jiva in forgetfulness of his self, Yogamaya made the cowherd boys forget separation from Krishna, which lasted a year. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when Krishna appeared before the boys, they thought, Krishna has returned within a minute. They began to laugh, thinking that Krishna was not willing to leave their lunchtime company. Right? Because he said, I'll go off and get the calves. And then he goes off and very quickly he comes right back. So they thought, oh, he can't go. He's feeling, you know, he's missing us. So he came back quickly. They were very jubilant and invited him. Dear friend Krishna, you have come back so quickly. All right, we have not as yet begun our lunch, not even taken one morsel of food. So please come and join us, right? Because they sat down to eat. And then at that time, then they noticed the calves were gone. So then he went to suggest that he would go and find them. And now having come back, then they were all just preparing to eat. And so now, they were ready to eat now with Krishna. Krishna smiled and accepted their invitation and began to enjoy the lunchtime company of his friends. While eating, Krishna was thinking, These boys believe I have come back within a second, but they do not know that for the last year I have been involved with the mystic activities of Lord Brahma. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna's transcendental body was decorated with peacock feathers and flowers and painted with forest minerals. And his bamboo flute loudly and festively resounded. As he called out to the calves by name, his cowherd boyfriends purified the whole world by chanting his glories. Right, so when he says called by name, he calls them on the flute. So he's so expert at playing flute, he can play their names on the flute. Right? But it'll sound nice. We're not talking like Jethro Tull here or something, right? Okay. And then the cowherd boys, they're glorifying Krishna, and that purifies the whole universe. Thus Lord Krishna entered the cow pasture of his father, Nanda Maharaj, and the sight of his beauty at once produced a great festival for the eyes of all the cowherd women. As the cowherd boys reached the village of Braja, they sang, today Krishna saved us by killing a great serpent. Some of the boys describe Krishna as the son of Yashoda, and others as the son of Nanda Maharaj, right? Depending on how they were telling the story and things like that. Verses 49-61. Krishna is dearer than one's own self, right? So as far as everybody's concerned, as far as the cowherd men and women, it's just the regular day they're coming back. The boys, then Krishna was gone for a moment. So no one actually understands what happens. Only Balaram knows. Okay. Krishna is dearer than one's own self. King Parikshit said, O Brahmana, how could the cowherd women have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love they never felt even for their own children? Please explain this. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The love for their own sons has now increased to as much as that for Krishna, which had exceeded the love for their own sons. But now their love for Krishna also increased even more. Their love for someone else's child kept exceeding the love for their own children, because now their own children are going to go back. So Krishna was there with in the pastimes, and the love for Krishna was greater than their own sons for the older gopis. Then, for that year that he played the part of their sons, now then their love for their sons increased up to the point it was equal to that of Krishna. Now that the boys are back, then the parents' loves for their sons are that same as before, but now seeing Krishna, the love for Krishna now increases. Right? So now it goes back to what it was before. That their love for Krishna is greater than their own sons. Though their own sons' love had come up to the position of Krishna, but now Krishna and their interaction even now exceeds that. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
King Pariket asked concerning this fact, how is it that the love for another's child increased beyond the love for their own child since the pastime with Lord Brahma? Usually parents have more love for their own children, even if others' children have better qualities. I think there was Akbar was talking about, I think, his son and how, you know, he just had a child and how beautiful and that the most beautiful baby in the world and this, going on and on and on. And so at one point then, who was his man?
Birbal.
Yeah, then he said, well, actually, I'll show you the most beautiful baby. He says, what? There's more beautiful baby than my baby? So he said, just give me a little time, you know? So then he went out in the kingdom, scoured the whole kingdom till he found one mother, and the love for a child was so immense, and the child was like super ugly. Really, really not attractive, you know? And so then when he found and all that, but her affection was so great, you know, even greater than Akbar's for his son. So then he called Akbar and said, now I'll show you the most beautiful baby. So the whole point is that the affection for the parents for their children, it doesn't matter if their children have great qualities or not, it's always great. So that's why he's amazed. How is it that the parents, the elder gopas and gopis, had more love for Krishna, who is not their child, than for their own children? Right? Because that's the standard, that's just how it works. Yeah.
Rupak also was Aravindalochana, a child who was born blind, but okay. The parents had named the child as Aravindalochana. Yeah. What is the meaning of Aravindalochana? He is blind. But yeah. Then that's the affection of the parents.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so affectionate. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What was the cause of contradiction to normal experience? Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self, the dearest of everything else. Children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self, right? So how dear you are to yourself, that's how dear everybody else is to you. Right? Hello? Sorry? Didn't make sense. Means... here, the normal experience is the parents have so much love for their own children more than anyone else's children. Why? Because their children are connected to themselves, so they love themselves the most. So that's why they love their children more than other children, because the other children aren't connected to them. So what's the important thing? Themselves. Right? Like that. That's why, how you say? Don't analyze the material world too carefully if you want to stay here. Because otherwise it just gets a little out of hand. Right? So, then, but here they love Krishna more because Krishna is the dear most. So that's the whole point. So Krishna is more dear, therefore that's why everything works. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes, Sukadev speaks, O King, a person has more attachment for his self than for his children. This fact will be examined first in five verses before coming to a conclusion. In ordinary dealings, one's own self is the object of extreme attachment. For each body there is one soul, for that body alone and not others. Right? So, yeah, so he's one soul in one body, and the person is attached to their own body and their own soul. Right, so that's why you see is that even though it's talking about the children are so dear and all that, but the plans that generally we see, especially in the modern society, the parents make, who is it about? Right, themselves. It's not in consideration of the children, but it's about themselves. They want to go on vacation. The kids couldn't care less. You understand? So it's always about themselves. But because they have that affection for themselves, the kids being connected to themselves, therefore the kids become, by extension, dear. Right? That's how the bodily conception works. Right? Things are expanded because of that. It's your house. What's the house? The house is connected to your body. family is connected to your body. Your business is connected to your body. You know, your facilities, your respect in the community is all connected to the body. So oneself, it's that. That's why it said the field of action is the body. When Krishna talks in Gita of the field of action, that means your body. We'll think it's no, it's the soul. No, it's the body, because the soul identifies with the body. So the body is the field of action. The soul is what is trying to act within that field. So that's why when we understand we're the soul, not the body, then why should the body be the most dear thing to the soul rather than Krishna? Right? Does that make sense? Satchitananda, mucus, bile, and air. Satchitananda, you know, blood, pus, and bones. Satchitananda, do we need to go on? Have we gotten the idea? Yeah, so that's the point, is when the soul understands that the reason that these ways are looked at in the material world is simply because then we start to separate from that identity of the material conditioning and start to identify as the soul, as servant of Krishna. Otherwise, what do we care what it's made out of? It's Krishna's energy. It's wonderful because of Krishna's arrangement. Because it's Krishna's arrangement, that's why it's wonderful. Not because it's our body, that's why it's wonderful. Because it actually isn't our body, it's just on lease. Right? You get it for however much time. Take care of it nicely, it'll work for 100 years. Take care of it less nicely, it lasts a little less. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's how it works. Yeah? Okay. Extended is pranamoy. But the point is, this is when push comes to shove, it goes back to anamoy. Right? Like that. So that's the... Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "For this reason, O best of kings, the embodied soul is self-centered. He is more attached to his own body and self than to his so-called possessions, like children, wealth, and home. Indeed, for persons who think the body is the self, O best of kings, those things whose importance lies only in their relationship to the body are never as dear as the body itself. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, even as the body is growing old and useless, one's desire to continue living remains strong." Right? So if you think the body is mine, not that the body is me, that's where you start to break down that. Because it's, I'm the soul, therefore the body's what's... Just like I'm the body, and that's more important than the extended bodily conception of the house and the family and the wealth and all those things. Right? Because I'm the body and these others are extensions. If I actually look at it, no, I'm the soul. And the body is also in that same position, then we have less affection for it than the soul. You understand? So that's how you start to break down. But then it has to switch to then Krishna is more important. Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "In this verse, the point is made that the person conscious of his body as self also holds the soul more dear than the body when he has some temporary realization. With a slight discrimination, when the attachment changes to the soul, even the bodily conscious person develops more love for soul than body." Right? Now and again that comes up, like smarshan vairagya. Right? That's times than people think and see the temporariness of the world and all that. You know, they get very philosophical in these kind of aspects. So then it pulls back to the soul, not the body. And so then it works. Okay? The body becomes dear because of the soul. Evidence is then given. Seeing the difficulties for the self on giving up the body, the person understands that they are not the pains of the soul, but only the body. Out of affection for the soul, he has the desire to keep the soul in that body. Right, so now it comes back to there, but still because of his self, and it's the body that's a problem, and because his attachment to it, therefore he tries to maintain the body, because then he, the soul, will be more happy.
In personal liberation, when they float like in the body, so now they are just a soul.
So no, actually, if we see, as we see, is that's what they're thinking. Right, but actually they're not. They have their form. They're just there in the in Mahakalapura. They're all sitting there. They have, what's his name? Gopakumar can see all their forms, but it's all just like white light, and everything's light and white, and that. So they just think that they don't have a body because they're in meditation, but they still have. So yeah, so you can give up on that one. Then. No need to maintain that one. Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, therefore, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being. And it is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exist. Every living entity is in it for themselves. So if you see, but this one's selfless or this or that, that still, they, due to their identity of that's how they are, and those bodies that are, they apply that selflessness on, then, but it's still about themselves, that they're the selfless person, but only in certain categories. They may be selfless with family members or friends or community, but, you know what I'm saying, but it has its limits. They're not going to be selfless for everybody. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the guys on the other side of the river, no, they're not going to be selfless over there. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's because his own village is connected to himself, therefore he has that selflessness. But in the next village, he's not selfless. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. All true. Okay. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. So, just as we're the body is there, we're taking that as the soul, then the extension of the body, then we understand we're the soul of the body, so therefore that's more dear, right? Than the body, and then the next dear is then the extensions of the body. But Krishna is the soul of the soul, so therefore that makes him the most dear, then the soul, then the body, then, you know what I'm saying? For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In bringing about the conclusion, the object more dear than the self will be shown. That object is Krishna. Krishna is the soul of the universe and the soul of all the souls. Just as sons are dear out of consideration of one's own body, and just as the body is dear out of consideration of one's own soul, so the soul is dear out of consideration of the Paramatma. Yeah. And Paramatma's perfection is Krishna. Right? So if we keep going back, that makes Krishna the most dear. As Gita says, by one part I maintain the whole universe. As Krishna is the most dear object, for the gopis, he is more dear than their own sons. This is the conclusion. Right? Because he's actually the soul of the soul. Right? So their sons are connected with the body. So Krishna will be more dear. But because the inhabitants of Braja were beyond Maya and full of bhakti, they had direct realization of Krishna. It was natural that they should show more affection for Krishna than their own sons. When the Lord appears in the world for the benefit of the souls, the ignorant think he has a material body like their own, a body created by Maya. But that is only an appearance, not the fact. Madhusudana Saraswati, author of Advaita Siddhi, also describes this. One cannot measure the glories of Narayana, the Supreme Person, whose body is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. This Krishna, the form of knowledge and bliss, with the color of a rain cloud, glorified in the Shrutis, is the necklace around the neck of the women of Braja. Or, in other meaning, Paramatma is not perceived by the senses, but Krishna is perceived by all. Thus the verse says, for the auspiciousness of the universe he appears, by his causeless inconceivable mercy. That Krishna appears in all the senses of everyone just like a person with a material body. He can be perceived by senses which are bestowed by him by his desire. So the Prakat Leela, where you can actually see him, or the Lord coming as the deity, then that's out of his own will he comes, and by his grace we can see. You can say, no, but anybody can see, but not everybody can see. I remember devotees telling me that when they had brought their parents to the temple, and, you know, and in those days, you know, it was, you know, the, you know, straight up front tour, no fancy sideshows or anything like that. So they go into the temple and things like that, and I'll ask, you know, so what do you think? And they'll say, yeah, it was a very, very nice flower arrangement, you know, very beautiful, all the flowers. And they could not see the deities. They only saw flowers. So it's only by Krishna's grace someone can see the deity. Right? So that grace comes through the devotees, as we see with, I think, that story of, who's the wrestler? Ramanujacharya's wrestler.
Muhammad Ali.
Who?
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali. Okay. Something we didn't know. Some special some one of these rare Tamil literatures. You know, the one who was always with Ramanujacharya?
Dhanudhar.
He was the one with the umbrella and the lady? Yeah. I think it's another
Dhanudas.
So what was his name before? But that's his name, Dhanudas. Okay. So he has this, there's a crowd. You know, it's a festival. The deity's out. And, you know, and all the opulence and everything like that. And Ramanujacharya's, you know, there, and the sannyasis are all there. And they notice this one guy is there with his umbrella. He's not looking at the deity at all. He's just looking at this girl, very beautiful young girl. And he's holding this umbrella because of the sun and all that. And she's basically not paying any attention to him, right? I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, right? And so then he's there. And so then they're all saying, wow, look at this guy. He's the most attached person we've ever seen, you know? And then somehow in the discussion, the point came up, it'd be impossible to get this person interested in bhakti. So Ramanujacharya asks somebody to go call him over. So he comes over. You know, he's respectful. And then he asked him, you know, what are you doing? You have this umbrella you're holding over the door. What's happening? He says, I'm a worshiper of beauty. And this is the most beautiful, you know, girl I've ever seen, most beautiful person I've ever seen. So therefore, I'm, you know, worshipping her by, you know, trying to do some service. So Ramanujacharya then says, if I show you the most beautiful person, will you worship that person? He says, of course. You know, that's my determination. So then he takes him in to see Rangaji. Right? And so then seeing Rangaji, then he sees he's the most beautiful person, so he surrenders and becomes a devotee. So by the grace of Ramanujacharya, he could see the deity. Right? So the point is that when Krishna is pleased, then you see him. That's all. It's not that, oh, because we have such fabulous senses, now we can see the Lord. Does this make sense? Yeah, so that's what's going on. Yeah? Yeah. Yes, Narayana says in Bhagavatam Rita, though the Lord is eternally unmanifest, he becomes visible by his own power. Otherwise, who could see him? Eternally unmanifest. So his Aprakat Leela, that's eternally going on. And the Prakat Leela, then, when it pleases him, it manifests. Right? So it's just his desire. So it's his desire in the 28th cycle of the Kali Yuga and the Vaivasvata Manu, then he will come in one day of Brahma. You know, so that's his desire. So that's how he arranges it. Sanatana Goswami says, right from the Bhagavatamrita, he becomes manifest by his own power. He is not revealed by the eye as an object of the eye's perception. Outside of Vrindavan, Krishna bestows his sweetness through his mercy to favorable persons, and to the inimical persons he shows his form, but devoid of sweetness for perfecting their meditation using their material senses, and as a result of their meditation bestows liberation to extinguish their offenses. Right? So their position is they don't have that affection, he never shows sweetness. So only if there's affection he'll show sweetness. That's the whole point. So we can understand from the pastime is that out of his affection for Brahma, he actually showed the sweetness. But because Brahma has that relationship of dealing up to this point, you know, in a formal way, as a demigod with the Supreme Lord, therefore he couldn't actually understand. So then he tried his clever tricks, and Krishna did more clever tricks. This is how he gives auspiciousness to them, right? So these impersonalists, then they don't see like this, but them seeing his form, but they don't see it as something transcendental. But still, through that worship, they get liberated. By getting liberated, it burns up all the, how you say, offenses that are there. And then they start over again, and then generate new offenses, like the elephant taking bath. Yeah. Also, though he appears like an ordinary mortal before the inhabitants of Braja, with the absence of the Lord's majesty and before the inimical persons, it is improper to call him a jiva with a material body, Dehi. So therefore, the verse describes him as Dehi Iva, appearing to be a soul with a body. For Madhvacharya is quoted from the Varaha Purana, in the Lord there is no difference between body and soul, Deha Dehi. But there is no, he is a body, you know, like we're not our body, but Krishna is his. Right? So, yeah. So all is eternal, so they're all their body. Yeah. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 20, text 162, Srila Prabhupada comments on verse 55 as follows. Prigad Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami why Krishna was so beloved by the residents of Vrindavan, who loved him even more than their own offspring for life itself. At that time, Sukadeva Goswami replied that everyone's atma, or soul, is very, very dear, especially to all living entities who have accepted material bodies. However, that atma, the spirit soul, is part and parcel of Krishna. For this reason, Krishna is very dear to every living entity. Everyone's body is very dear to oneself, and one wants to protect the body by all means, because within the body the soul is living. Due to the intimate relationship between the soul and the body is important and dear to everyone. Similarly, the soul being part and parcel of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is very, very dear to all living entities. Right? Because we're part of Him. And so we also see is that's why then all the living entities are dear to Krishna. Because we're all part and parcel to Him. So it's not that, you know, He gets upset and thunderbolts are flying and people are turning into little piles of ashes. That's not how it works. You have something? No. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as He is, sees all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such enlightened persons recognize no reality apart from the Supreme Lord. Right? So, they see everything as Krishna, because He and His energy are non-different. So, like this hut here, this hut is Krishna. That's why it does what it does. Bricks, they have their potency because of Krishna. So it's manifesting Krishna's potency. He is the potency. He is the brick. Right? He is that you can make bricks into columns and into walls, and you can support them, and then the bamboos, and then all the different things, and the grasses. Its waterproofness and thermalness, and its bamboo strength, and the rope, and all these different things. It's all Krishna. So they don't see anything other than Krishna. They can tell the difference between Krishna as Bhagavan and Krishna as this hut. But they know that Krishna, his potencies are all pervading, so therefore this hut is also Krishna. Right? They can understand the difference between the three features of the Lord, so they're attracted to the Bhagavan feature. But the point is that it's the Bhagavan feature who expands as the localized super soul, and his effulgence is the Brahman. And so everything's based on all these. Right? And so that's then, they don't see anything separate from Krishna. Therefore, there's not a question on how to, what do I do now? You know, it's not a matter, they don't see Maya. They only see Krishna. They just see Yoga Maya. Right? And they see how Yoga Maya expanded as Mahamaya acts on all the living entities according to Krishna's direction. And accordingly, then they deal with all the living entities according to the nature how they identify themselves in the creation. Right? Because all the living entities are worshipping Krishna in the form of their particular values. What's their attraction to the material energy? That attraction actually, that what they're attracted to is Krishna. Right? And so then they're actually worshipping Krishna, though they think it's the material energy. And the body they have then is Krishna's potency that they're using to worship Krishna, like the Ganga being used to worship the Ganga. Right? And so although there is all these souls who are interacting with Krishna in these ways according to Krishna's, the modes of nature, how it functions. So they only see all living entities in relation to Krishna. But because they're unaware of this, that's why then they may then try to help them by addressing. If they're just in that uttamadhikari mood, then that's how they see. They're already devotees. They're already serving. Right? But when they come to the Madhyama platform, then they will make a distinction. Okay, who of these souls who are, you know, in this position of worshipping Krishna at all these different levels of materialistic perception, which ones of them are actually innocent and which ones of them are inimical to the concept of being Krishna conscious? So the ones that are innocent, then they will try to help them become aware and revive their Krishna consciousness. And the other ones they'll avoid. Right? But even if they deal with them because they see in the Uttama level, they can approach and they can get through the covering that the Madhyama and the neophyte wouldn't be able to. You know, it's like, you know, see in Back to Godhead, then there's always that one, you know, section on Prabhupada Speaks Out. They still call this Prabhupada Speaks Out? Okay, cool. You know. Not Prabhupada pleasantly and politically correctly replies. Or, no, it's still Prabhupada Speaks Out.
Prabhupada's opinions.
Yeah, okay.
Prabhupada suggests.
Yeah. So we see there is the conversation opens. Right? You know, there might be a pleasantry or this or that. Person asks a question, Prabhupada gives an answer. There's a doubt, Prabhupada asks an answer again. And then basically you see the whole rest of the page. Prabhupada's just talking, the other person's listening and very submissively. Right? Let us say that same person is there and we're talking to them. After the pleasantries, we make our points. They ask, they have their doubts, we make points like that, and it keeps going back and forth like that to the whole end of the BTG. Does that make sense? That's the difference, is that they're doing the function of a Madhyamadhikari, but their realization is that of an Uttamadhikari, so very quickly they can cut through, they can get to the root. Why are they doing that? They simply deal with what it is about Krishna that they are appreciating, and deal with that. What's to argue with? But we'll deal with the secondary aspect. And so therefore, you can argue all day about that. Why all day? You can do it until the cows come home, or if you're not in the village, and so that means nothing until the end of time, if that works for you. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point. You can just go on and on and on. But they cut through to what the soul is actually attracted to, attached to, what's important to them. And the lack of shelter that the living entity finds, though they're trying to satisfy themselves through that worship of the Lord. Right, as matter. Does that make sense? So they're just cutting through all that. That's why the primary is the most important. We talk about, no, but you have to do the secondary like this, secondary like that. You can get where it's like people will tolerate or maybe a little appreciative, but to be Krishna conscious, that's a whole other thing. because you spend all your time just trying to placate their their self-centered position. That's then what one ends up doing if one just uses the secondary. But if you approach with the primary, then you cut through all that, because the primary is not to do it. The soul doesn't actually have anything to do with the body. Right? So therefore, if you deal on the platform of the soul, in context of the body, right, then it's very easy. You immediately go through all this coverings. So then what Sukadeva Goswami is talking about, those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as he is, see all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're all Krishna. You can say, yes, but it's his energy. Yes, it's his energy. But the point is Krishna's energy are non-different. Right? Because we have to be careful that we don't separate his energy too much. Right? If it's just oneness, that's a problem. But if it's just difference, that's also a problem. Because if it's just his energy, then I can control the energy. No, if it's Krishna, can I control Krishna? How would I behave with the person if I understood it's a manifestation of Krishna? Possibly differently than if I think of them as a nonsense, karmi rascal, you know, like that. That makes sense? And you according to your particular locale and language can add on more, words to bring out the essence of the nonsenseness of this person. Does that make sense? So that's what one has to cut through that. That's why they do this, because they don't see the difference between it and Krishna. But they can tell the difference between the features of Krishna. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. You say, oh, but it's all one, but then that's Mayavad. No, it's not, because Mayavadis can only understand that there is Brahman. They only understand that it has no material qualities and it's unlimited. They can't understand anything more than that. They can't understand that the material energy is expanding from Brahman. The whole manifestation we see is coming from Brahman. It's the potency of Brahman. They can't see that. They can't see that Brahman is the effulgence of the Paramatma, of the universe, Purana Dakshai Vishnu, Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, Hira Dakshai, and that they're an expansion of Mahanarayan, Sankarshan is the expansion of Mahanarayan, is the expansion of Baladev, who's an expansion of Krishna. Right? And Krishna in his forms are non-different, therefore him in the whole cosmos is non-different, because he knows everything and everything everywhere. We can say, oh, it's just a pillar, but Krishna knows what's going on with that pillar. You go up and kick the pillar, Krishna knows it. Right? And then at some other point, then, bricks will fall on your foot. Right? So he reciprocates. Does that make sense? So just remember that. Next time you drop something on your foot, remember, did I kick something? Does this make sense? So we're talking about a very elevated position where there's so Krishna conscious, they don't see anything other than Krishna. Now, of Krishna, then his material creation isn't as wonderful as his spiritual. And of the spiritual, then Vaikuntha is not as wonderful as Gokula. Right? And in Gokula, then all the residents, the place, everything is perfect because it's all about Krishna. So then that's the most wonderful manifestation. So they can tell the difference. They can tell the difference between... That's the point. This idea that, oh, it's all one, you can't tell the difference. But actually they can. Because it's all Brahman, so it's all transcendental. But the point is they can tell the difference in the variety of Brahman. Does that make sense?
Since when you understand everything is Krishna, then there is nothing to hate in this world.
No.
But we see that one purport of Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada describes about the different progeny of Kali and Durukti. And in that purport he writes that once you hear this, you will be filled with hatred, and this hatred will free you from the contamination of this world. So what can you understand? Hatred for, say, Kali and those kinds?
Because it's against It's all connected to Krishna, but these living entities are using their position to oppose Krishna's position. Is that what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So from that platform, because it goes back to the secondary rasas, right? You have seven secondary rasas, right? You know, I said laughter,
astonishment.
Go to some nicer ones first.
Chivalry.
Dread and ghastliness are the last, but just before that there's something else. Anger. Okay, anger. So then these six of them are manifest in the spiritual world. Ghastliness is manifest in the material world. So when the living entity understands the difference between the soul and the body and between spiritual taste and material taste, then the whole material manifestation takes on that flavor of ghastliness. You know, so if you're looking at it from that point, it takes that on. So then that then, as Prabhupada said, purifies the soul, because then you absolutely don't connect with it. But, for, you know, you understand? So, for preaching, then you won't necessarily look at the ghastly aspect, but you're looking at how living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, how they can be engaged in service. He's given the natures, he's given all these things. Therefore, someone who has a particular nature will act in a particular way. You know what I'm saying? You preach to, let's say, a scholar, they'll act in a particular way. You talk to an administrator, they'll act in a different way. You talk to a businessman another way, an artist another way. And so therefore those natures are given by Krishna, there you deal with them according to that, because it's all Krishna's potency, it's all Krishna. So you're trying to bring that soul in line. But if you think about material relationships in rasa, then ghastliness is the first thing to come to mind. Right? And so here then, when we talk about material consciousness, then Kali and his cohorts, you don't get more mundane than that. Right? You know what I'm saying? So even we find the demons sometimes have a better day or a little better behavior than they do. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You said everything is energies and qualities of Krishna. That aspect, if this becomes an impetus for us to remember him.
It's one of the ways, but it's in other words, it's the way of understanding where we are trying to see on the transcendental platform. So that's part of the vision of the Shanta Rasa, is that one sees on that platform. That's how they always see. But more important to them is Krishna's pastime. So therefore, they're going to see the activities that Krishna does and all that. But when they're just looking at the world moving through the world, it just reminds them of Krishna, because everything's Krishna. And then from that, then depending upon their experience in dealing with Bhagavan aspect of the Lord, then they'll remember back to Bhagavan. That's why they're on the platform of prema. Right? So everybody goes through that stage, you know, wherever they're going to end up in the position in the spiritual world, because that means they've given up the attachment to the material world. Does that make sense? So for us, however much we see it, then that's how much it... The point is it's only valuable for us in as much as we think the material world is valuable. Right? Because actually it's just Krishna that's valuable. So if you just see Krishna, then what's the problem? But if you see some aspect of material energy as important, then by seeing it in connection to Krishna, and that Krishna is actually the thing you value in that thing, that's how you purify. So you only have to use it where you apply your values not to Krishna. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada writes the following summary to this section in Krishna book. Sukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Parikit that every living entity is actually most attached to his own self. Outward paraphernalia such as home, family, friends, country, society, wealth, opulence, and reputation are all only secondary in pleasing the living entity. They please only because they bring pleasure to the self. For this, does that make sense? They're pleased with themselves, and because these things bring pleasure to the self, therefore they're pleased with them. Because as soon as they don't bring pleasure to the self, then unless they're dutiful, they give them up. Does that make sense? That's how the modern world works. So they've gone from a position of relationships being based on duty, though the reason you're interacting is because of the benefit you'll get, but at least you'll follow, means I am trying to get what I want, and the other person trying to get what they want. If we all follow our duties, everybody gets what they're looking for. But it's still, I'm only involved in the system because what I want to get. Right? But in the modern system, when you give up the Vedic system, you give up the Varnashram and Dharma and duties like this, then the difficulty comes up is it's only that because you're doing because what you get. So as soon as you feel I'm not getting what I should for the work I'm putting in, it's not balanced, then one gives it up. So that's the weakness. It's not based on Dharma, that's something you should do. So therefore, now you get no benefit, and the other person gets no benefit. Right? So nobody can get any benefit out of it. And everybody's just trying to get their own out of it, but they can't get, because your benefit comes from someone else. That's how it works. Whatever good or bad things you'll get, it will come from someone else. Right? We complain, oh, I'm getting so much trouble from others, but we're also getting so much benefit from others. We're not complaining about that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. They please, it means the secondary aspects, they please only because they bring pleasure to the self. For this reason, one is self-centered and is attached to his body and self more than he is to relatives like wife, children, and friends. If there is some immediate danger to one's own person, he first of all takes care of himself, then others. That is natural. That means he loves his own self more than anything else. The next important object of affection after his own self is his material body. A person who has no information of the spirit soul is very much attached to his material body, so much so that even in old age he wants to preserve the body in so many artificial ways, thinking that his old and broken body can be saved. Everyone is working hard day and night just to give pleasure to his own self, under either the bodily or material spiritual concept of life. We are attached to material possessions, so the bodily or spiritual concept of life, and here, meaning I would expect here, would be the impersonalists. Right? Because it's still about themselves, the soul. It's not, it doesn't go beyond that. We are attached to material possessions because they give pleasures to the senses or to the body. The attachment to the body is there only because the I, the spirit soul, is within the body. Similarly, when one is further advanced, he knows that the spirit soul is pleasing because it is part and parcel of Krishna. Certainly, one is further advanced, he knows that the spirit soul is pleasing because it is part and parcel of Krishna, right? So everybody's attached to themselves, the soul. And most don't even understand they're the soul. They identify with the body. They think the body is the soul. But even if they understand the soul, the reason the soul, whatever you think it is valuable, is because the soul is part and parcel of Krishna. That's why it's valuable, because we're part of Krishna. Krishna is the most valuable, therefore being part of Krishna, therefore there's that value. So even our own inherent self-centeredness is only because the self comes from Krishna. Ultimately, it's Krishna who is pleasing and all attractive. So ultimately it goes back to Krishna. Though we're part and parcel, we're attractive as a part of Krishna. So imagine how attractive is the whole. Right? The complete whole. Right? He is the super soul of everything, and in order to give us this information, Krishna descends and tells us that the all-attractive center is He Himself. Without being an expansion of Krishna, nothing can be attracted. So, everything that we find attractive is because it is a feature of Krishna. It's expanded from Krishna. And according to our conditioning, we're interested in interacting with Krishna in a particular way. Therefore, we have a particular kind of mind, particular kind of senses, particular kind of body, intelligence, ego, all that, so that we can interact with those aspects of Krishna, right? A group of people walk down the same street, they all see something different. They perceive different things, they experience different things, right? Because what the combination of senses and mind and that they have is different. Right? There's some common point, otherwise why are they in a group? But other than that common point, what's important to them is different. Right? Because they're all seeing different aspects of Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that if we find ourselves attractive, that's because we're part and parcel of Krishna. You find anything else attractive, that's because it's also expanded from Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is the only attractive thing. Right? And all other things, their attractiveness is because of the connection to Krishna. Whatever is attractive within the cosmic manifestation is due to Krishna. Krishna is therefore the reservoir of all pleasure. Right? All pleasure, whatever we're looking for in happiness, from whatever we're dealing with, it comes from Krishna, because he's the reservoir of all pleasure. Everything's coming from him. The active principle of everything is Krishna, and highly elevated transcendentalists see everything in connection with him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that a Mahabhagavata, or a highly advanced devotee, sees Krishna as the active principle in all movable and immovable living entities. Therefore, he sees everything within this cosmic manifestation in relation to Krishna. For the fortunate person who has taken shelter of Krishna's everything, liberation is already there. He is no longer in the material world. Right, because if you see Krishna as everything, where's the material world? Right? It doesn't mean that it will change. What it means is that we think that the manifestations we're seeing is material. But actually it's just one of Krishna's energies. It's his inferior energy, but it's still Krishna's energy. So the material world technically is our perception that there's a world without Krishna that I can do whatever I like, or at least whatever I can get away with. You understand? So for these Mahabhagavatas, they don't see that. They only see Krishna and opportunities to serve Krishna. So they're not in the material world. The material world's a perception. They're within this one quarter of the, you know, four quarters of the cosmic creation. And they're in this particular universe on this planet and this, that's there. But they're not in the material world. They're liberated. They're transcendental because they don't see anything separate from Krishna. Because conditioning means I don't see it connected to Krishna. Liberation means I only see Krishna. Right? Krishna, I see everything in connection to Krishna. So one's on the transcendental platform. So it's not about a place. It's about consciousness. So material and spiritual is consciousness. So those with proper consciousness, they stay in the three quarters of the cosmos. And those with not proper consciousness, they stay in the one quarter. But it's consciousness that makes the differentiation, because those from the spiritual world come down here to preach, they're not in the material world. They're here in this quarter. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have in a city different quarters, you know. You know, this is where the Marwaris stay, this is where the Bengalis are, this is, you know, the Gujus on this side. You know, you have the different breakup like that. So in the cosmos, then this is where the Mandasumanda Matayo, Mandabhagya stay. Right? Yeah. Yes. The active principle of everything is Krishna. He has unlimited qualities. It's his qualities, but it's his potency that why that quality is there. So it's by Krishna's arrangement it's there. So it's not just, he has qualities and it happens to be here. It's actually by Krishna's arrangement. So it is Krishna. But it's different from him as a person. That's the point he makes in the Chatushloki, is that he is everything. He is the active principle of everything. He is the value of everything. He is, you know, the goal of everything, what everybody wants. But not seeing that in relation to him, you're an illusion. You see it in relation to him, you're transcendental. But then the next verse he says is that this, even though I am everything, I'm still beyond everything. So he as a person, as Bhagavan, is beyond how he expands as Brahman and Paramatman and creates everything. Does that make sense? So he as a person is beyond, because it's due to his desire these things are there. So that's the point. The devotee can see Krishna in everything and as non-different, but at the same time they can see Krishna as a person is different. Because it is Krishna, but it's different. So that's why Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, you know, helps out in that understanding. Yeah? Okay. Okay. For the fortunate person who has taken shelter of Krishna as everything, liberation is already there. He is no longer in the material world. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Whoever is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna is already on the Brahma-Bhuta, or spiritual platform. The very name Krishna suggests piety and liberation. Because he's all attractive, so you're attracted to him, not the material nature. That means then you're liberated. But, yeah. Anyone who takes piety, then... you see everything in connection with Krishna. So that's piety. And that you see it in connection with Krishna, attracted to Krishna, not the material energy. Therefore, you're liberated. Anyone who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna enters the boat for crossing over the ocean of nescience. For him, this vast expanse of the material manifestation becomes as insignificant as the water in a calf's hoof print. Right, not even a cow's hoof print or a bull's hoof print. No, a calf's hoof print. Because a calf's hoof print is not very big. Yeah, small. Krishna is the shelter of all great souls, and he is also the shelter of the material worlds. For one who is on the platform of Krishna consciousness, Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world, is not far away. He does not live within the material world where there is danger at every step. Right? Because what's the real danger? Right? For getting Krishna. See, we're worried about danger because then the danger is to the body or things connected to the body. Because we think we're the body. And then so that death, that changes and you move to a new situation. Now a new body, new attachments. Right? So that's how it works. So then one becomes fearful at loss of anything that one identifies with. But if you see yourself as servant of Krishna, and whatever situation you're in, you're seeing it all connected to Krishna, therefore how to use this in Krishna's service, then what situation is actually dangerous? What situation is fearful? Right? Because fear means forgetting our relationship with Krishna. Right? Because, yeah. That makes sense. We'll be separated from, but how can you be separated from Krishna? Everything's Krishna. But for the materialist, they've forgotten their relationship with Krishna. And they don't want to be reminded of that either because they think of the body. But what they don't realize is that the body is Krishna. And what they're worshipping in the form of, you know, house and family and money and position is also Krishna. So then if the situation is dangerous, that changes. So it's their relationship with Krishna as they know it changes. Because they only know the secondary. They don't know the primary. They don't actually understand it's Krishna. So therefore they're afraid. But for the pure devotee, he sees everything in connection with Krishna. So therefore, where's the separation? Does that make sense? He's never separated from Krishna. Right? So that's one of the aspects. That's the aspect of Shanta Ras. There's no feeling of separation because you see Krishna as everything.
So, Brahma-Bhuta platform is analogous to Shanta Ras.
Brahma-Bhuta platform is
analogous to Shanta Ras.
is?
Analogous.
No, it's just I can't hear what you're saying. It's not
the Brahmabhuta platform is analogous to Shantaras.
The Brahmabhuta is analogous to Shantaras. And yes, that level. It's not that necessarily that being on that one's going to be, that is one's rasa. What we're saying is that's the point, because Shantaras means you're seeing everything in relationship to Krishna in a devotional way. So it's a solid position, because from there, when that deepens, then it turns into the next rasa, and like this it continues. So you can say it's the beginning of actual being spiritually situated. So, in this way, Krishna consciousness was fully explained to Maharaj Parikit by Sukadeva Goswami as he recited to the king the statements and prayers of Lord Brahma. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The original unmanifested form of material nature is the source of all material things, and the source of even that subtle material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. What then could one ascertain to be separate from him?" Right, so everything we see here is coming from the material energy, and the material energy is coming from Krishna. So what can we say is separate from him? There's nothing. It's not that, oh no, in my place it's separate. Right? The laws of nature don't work in my house. That's why when you come in, then you notice you're walking on the ceiling, you see all the furniture's on the ceiling and all that, because the laws of nature are not working there. And that's just because he's decided he likes sitting on the ceiling. It's fun. But sometimes it's on the walls, or, you know, sometimes he sits all around, you know, because there's less space, that way more people can sit. Some on the floor, some on the walls, some on the ceiling. Right? You know, so then, you know, it's really good for when he, you know, has big parties and stuff like that. That makes sense? Yeah. So, nothing separate from him. For those who have accepted the abode of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parampadam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. Right? That's the material world. Since you inquired from me, I have fully described to you those activities of Lord Hari that were performed in his fifth year, but not celebrated until his sixth. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, "In this way, the final object of love has been proved." Right. So now we see is that in this, we're appreciating the affection that the Brajabasis have, but we may not understand it scientifically or philosophically of how Krishna is the most dear, because that's just the actual position. Right? Does that make sense? And so, having appreciated this, these are the topmost yogis in the cosmos, are the Brajabasis, because they go beyond all this understanding of his greatness in that to the point of sweetness, because the sweetness is much greater than the greatness. Right? Does that make sense? The greatness is great, but the sweeter is even greater. Right? Only by taking shelter of his lotus feet does one get liberated and finally realize him. Right? So unless the devotee, only the devotee, because he takes shelter of Krishna, that's why then Krishna reveals himself. You don't take shelter, you don't understand. You can read every book that you want, you'll never understand. The outstanding position of the devotee is thus made clear now. Right? So if we actually see how everybody is a servant of the Lord, everyone's serving the Lord, then the devotees are outstanding because they actually see things as they are. So we're talking about real intelligence, real transparency, real knowledge, real qualities. These are only to be had in the devotees, because they see things as they are. They see Krishna as he is. But everybody else, no one else sees Krishna in this way. They all see him as something to exploit. They don't understand his position. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, right? Because you want to show all devotees are special to the karmis and jnanis, and of devotees, then the residents of Braja are the best.
Somehow we are seeing earlier Yashoda Ma, Yashoda is superior than Devaki was established.
Yes, yes, yes.
And now all the other gopis and
yes,
the cowherd boys get up in between, they are eating with Lord.
Yes, so everything becomes gradually. Because the point is if you remember when we were first came into the 10th canto and we're going through the different pastimes, and the you could say the external, the interactions of the devotees, we were finding fault in that, you know, because it's against the modern standards of how people should act. But now it brought it to the point where in discussing that, there's generally even not even any question, because it's just so scientifically beyond anything that we're working with. You know, before it's alluded to how the Uttamadhikari sees. Now you see it's very clearly explained, very scientifically, but it can only be understood after 9 cantos of Bhagavatam. Okay. Is that what someone said? So that's the whole thing, is then when it comes to the point where what accepts the greatness of the devotees, accepts. So we can see as even the neophyte devotee is greater than the best karmi or jnani, even though we'll say, oh, but the jnani knows so much and the karmi behaves so well and is so successful in life. But are they really? Because whatever they're dealing with is Krishna. Their body is Krishna's energy. The activities of the body are Krishna's energy. The results of that are Krishna's energy. The values that they have in it are actually Krishna, but they think it's the energy. And so actually, they don't have anything. They're just like, you know, puppets in the hand of the doll master. So the modes of nature, Triguna Mayi, she just gives them a run for their money. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you go to a fair, right? And there's so many rides that are there. And so you pay money for a ticket for that ride. You get on the ride. You make the ride happen. You make the roller coaster go up. I make the roller coaster go up. I make it go down. I make it spin. I make everyone vomit. Right? Is that what's going on? No, you do nothing. You simply, how you say, paid the price for the ride. So in the same way is that whatever the rules are, the individuals paid the price of endeavor in the way of money or family or position or facilities. And the modes of nature take care of it. They do not do any of that. They'll say, yeah, I did so much business. No, you didn't. The modes of nature did the business. You just were agreeable to go along and take part in the austerity of performing the rules of business to get the money. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's how it is. So someone arranges. Is that... Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. Any person who hears or chants these pastimes Lord Murari performed with his cowherd boys, the killing of Agasura, the taking of lunch on the forest grass, the Lord's manifestation of transcendental forms, and the wonderful prayers offered by Lord Brahma, is sure to achieve all his spiritual desires. In this way, the boys spent their childhood in the land of Vrindavan, playing hide and go seek, building play bridges, jumping about like monkeys, and engaging in many other such games. Right? So, having brought it to the platform of the pinnacle of self-realization and devotion and all that, then the cowherd boys, this is what they do with that. Why? Because they do all this with Krishna. So Krishna is the center of all these activities. Hide and seek, building clay bridges, jumping about. Whatever they do is just to please Krishna and to be involved with Krishna. Okay? Nothing else. So that's the perfection of all religion, all yoga, all knowledge, all karma. Right. I think it's, what is it? Is that 11:55?
Yes.
Yeah. So 11:55 in the Gita, that whatever benefits you get from all the religious processes are gained through bhakti. Okay. So that's the...
in the earlier cantos, in the earlier cantos, when the fellowship became, at that many times he also had, you know, the material desires being taken, and now he speaks of the spiritual desires.
Yes, now here the Falashruti then talks about all spiritual desires, because now you come to the point where if you're here at this point, then that's what you should be looking at. And if not, then you can go back however many cantos you like to whatever level of benefit you want. Yes. Okay, then it doesn't say who's speaking here. King Pariket had asked the question, O great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done at the present? Lord Shri Krishna performed the pastime of killing Agasura during his Kaumara age. How then, during his Pauganda age, from the fifth year, could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? The answer having been completed, Sukadeva Goswami now continues to narrate the pastimes. Krishna and Balaram spent their time secretly in Braja, playing hide and seek, Nilaya and Ahi, building a bridge to Lanka, and enacting pastimes of other avatars, such as churning the ocean of milk. Sorry?
This is commented by Chakravarti Thakur.
Vishnu Chakravarti, you should make a note that they should put that in. Right, so then, so this is just concluding what he said in the beginning. Right, so they spend all the time just playing games, or if they're going to play, you know, do bigger arrangements and all that, then they do it as the different avatars of the Lord, what he does. Right, because they're all devotees. So they all are going to be devotees of Vishnu and what things he does. Does that make sense? But, so that's the form that they use, but they're all devotees of Krishna. So they're doing all these pastimes with Krishna. Does that make sense? Like Nanda Baba is fully devoted to Krishna, but he's praying to his deity of Vishnu to protect Krishna. Right? So in this way, all the cowboys boys will know all the pastimes of the Lord, and so then they play those parts. Because what gets more fun than what the Lord does? You're not going to find anything greater than that. You know, no kings, no magical things, no mystical things, no different amazing arrangements are going to be greater than the Lord. And so, since for kids, there's no obstacle when they play pretend. You know, they want to build a bridge to Lanka, it's easy to build a bridge. Right? You know, a few of them come in, bring big stones, and they'll do this and that, and someone will tell them what to do, and within a few minutes it's built. Right? So they don't have a problem. So that's how they spend their time. So that's why Prabhupada said the children then can play like this. Right? Because that's what the children do in Braj.
Nityananda Prabhu is doing.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the whole point. That's what they do.
Maharaj, again, it's a question regarding when Krishna expanded.
When Krishna expanded.
Yeah.
Okay.
As the calves, boys, and so then those expansions were the Prakash forms.
Prakash, meaning they would be manifesting the personalities that are different from Krishna. So whatever forms do that, that's what he's doing. See, because he can expand like he does with the gopis in the rasa dance, you know, in the palaces of the queens of Dwarka. Then he expands, even though they're different forms, they're all doing different things. It's the same personality. When he expands and the personality is different, like Balaram, then that's how he's done here. Because otherwise, how does he interact with them? Important verses. So many important verses. Jane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti san mukaritam bhavad Dhiya Vartam Stane Stita Shruti Gatam Tanu Van Manobhir Ye Prash Yasho Jita Jitopi Asi Trais Tri Lokyam. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds, right? No one can conquer Krishna because he is the sum total of everything. So no one has the potency he has or the knowledge he has. Right? But we see is by discussing the past name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord as described by the Lord himself or by the devotees themselves. That then conquers Krishna. And in that position, then one is able to, develop that relationship with Krishna. Right? So it's always by hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4 Shreya Shritim Bhaktim Udasyate Vibho Klishyanti Ye Kevala Bhodha Labhyate Tesham Asau Kleshala Eva Shishasyate Nanyad Yata Stula Tushva Gadhakinam. Interesting. Brahma generally always does chants in that 14 verse, 14 syllable. My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone comes up, gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired results. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get any grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. So here in the positive and negative, then Lord Brahma has then established the position of bhakti. So if giving up karma and jnana, you take up service to Krishna by hearing, chanting, and remembering about the Lord, then you gain actual self-realization. If you give up bhakti and take up karma and jnana, then you're never going to get anything except the trouble it takes to go through it. That's the only benefit you'll actually get. So, 10.14.8 Nate nukampam su samikshyamano bunjana evat matakritam vipakam puridvag vapurbhir viradhan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you the respectful obeisances within his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So then that person who has come to that platform of devotional service, always hearing and chanting and remembering, does not give up that position, despite whatever trouble may be there, understanding that I'm getting all this trouble simply from previous, lack of Krishna consciousness. So, patiently putting up with that, being involved in Krishna's service all the time, then it's natural that they are eligible to be, situated in full Krishna consciousness, freed from the material energy and in a position of transcendence. 10.14.29 Atapi te deva padambuja dvaya prasada leshanu grihita grihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanye ekopi chiram vichin van. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. From Lord Brahma. So, just a slight trace of mercy of the Lord that's come, that as Krishna explains before, by the grace of the devotees, one gets that mercy, and by that, one can start to understand the Lord. Otherwise, you have someone who's not practicing Krishna consciousness. They come in contact with the devotees, and then they can start to appreciate Krishna and his and what's going on in Krishna consciousness. Why? That's because of Krishna's mercy. So you deal with the devotees properly, Krishna then shows his mercy, reveals himself. 10.14.58 Samashrita ye padapallava plavam Mahat padam punya yasho murarehi bhavam bhudir vatsa padam param yad viparam natesham. For those who accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Paramparam, Vaikuntha, the place where there is are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. Right? So then, having taken shelter of the Lord, then being dependent upon the Lord's mercy, gaining that mercy, and then being fixed in that, then they cross over the material ocean and become situated at the Lord's lotus feet. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's the process. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurakinda ki.